Welcome to the Global Marketing Show, the podcast for all things international business. I'm your host, Wendy Pease, president of Rapport International and a translation expert. Come along with me today as we talk to an expert in the global marketing world about facing their biggest fears, hearing about mistakes they made or saw, discussing best practices, and sharing fun travel language and culture stories. Hi, thanks for joining the Global Marketing Podcast. Today we welcome Brittany Cooper, who actually launched a startup in the travel industry and had to go international immediately. So we're going to hear more about that. Welcome, Brittany.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. Excited to be here.
Great to be here. So right now you're working for Passport as a marketing automation specialist, and we'll get into a little bit more about what Passport does. And then we met when you were a marketing account manager for a creative agency, the Lair Group. So, but before that, you launched the startup and you lived in Spain as an English as a second language specialist.
Yeah, I was working for this international company that places you in schools throughout Spain. And I did that for 2 years. And I came back to the U.S. with this huge passion for travel and for this interest in international business, and considered going back to get like an MBA in international business. But I got really lucky by finding this job posting. I think it was on Monster or something, for a marketing, like an entry-level marketing position at a startup company that was in the travel industry. And it was really, I'm not going to say sketchy, but it was really vague, the job posting. But I was very curious, and I think it was intentional they did it that way. But it promised travel, and it promised getting in on the ground level and really getting your hands in there and boots on the ground marketing. I was super excited about it. And the interview process was grueling. It was like 2 months before I heard back. Yeah, because there were, I mean, with a job description like that, they had thousands of people applying to it. So I was really shocked when I got the job offer. But again, super excited because it totally aligned with what I was looking to do. It was business. It was international. It was traveling the world. So I got to keep that part of my spirit intact when I made my introduction into the corporate world, I guess. And I started, the company was based in St. Pete, Florida. So I flew down to Florida. We had a beautiful office on First Avenue, which is like the main drag there in St. Pete. And I learned a lot of things very quickly. I was kind of thrown into the deep end of the swimming pool. Again, this was an entry-level position, and I had some real world experience, but not a lot of real marketing experience outside of some internships I'd done in college. So I learned very quickly what it takes to succeed, just in marketing, but also in trying to start up a business internationally.
Okay. So not only was it a startup, but it's starting up internationally. So tell us about that. What was your biggest fear about getting into international business and starting up, and what were people worried about?
Yeah, the biggest fear was just the fear of the unknown. I mean, I was joining a team of two other marketers, and then there were some other people in the organization who had some experience in international marketing, but my experience internationally had been just living there and teaching there and experiencing. You know, my background wasn't in bringing something to market internationally, and I think we were all, you know, very excited but so nervous about bringing this concept or this application to a global audience. And again, both feet in, jumping into the deep end of the swimming pool, we just went for it. We created messaging, we created assets, we started running ads in top travel cities around the globe, and very quickly we learned that there are laws, there are rules, there are cultural differences that we were not accounting for just because we didn't have that experience. And in some ways it was the right, I'm not going to say it was the right thing to do. I'm not saying our approach was the best approach, but in doing it all at once, it gave us such clear, immediate feedback on what we were doing wrong and allowed us to pivot and to pull back. You know, we spent about two or three weeks really experimenting and putting messages out in the marketplace. And especially in social media, I don't think things would have happened the same way a decade ago or maybe even 5 years ago, but given social media and the immediacy of feedback that you can get on those channels, I think that really allowed us to grow and learn in a way we maybe couldn't have had we been using other channels. So just to give an example, we were running these really cute Facebook and Instagram ads on partner with Tour Me and share your tour guide company on our application. We'll give you a marketing kit and all this kind of stuff to help grow your travel business. And we were running this ad.
Can you explain a little bit more about what Tour Me did and then get into the example? Because I think it's really good, but I just want to frame it.
Absolutely, absolutely. So Tour Me, we kind of positioned it as the Uber of tour guides or of tourism. And it was a mobile application where we partnered with tour companies or independent tour guides to host their tours on our app. And the benefit there was that if I'm going to Greece in a month and I want to make sure I'm getting the most out of the city, I could pull up Tour Me and I could search for walking tours. I could search for boat tours, and it would show me all of these tour guides and tour companies available. Rather than me going and doing independent research and looking at all the different companies, I could see reviews, I could see pictures and connect with the tour guides right on the application. So the idea was incredible. We were doing some testing in the market just to see about response to it. And it was so positive. Both the tour guides and tour companies and users were just really excited about this concept. What it meant for the tour guides and the tour companies was just exposure internationally that it can be expensive to get or hard to get. And it was free to use our platform. We just added like a 2-cent service charge or something on the transaction that went to the client. It didn't go to the tour guide itself or to the tour company. So it was a great value prop. It was a great tool. The app was beautiful. They had spent 2 years developing it before they hired the marketing team to come on to take it to market. So I really believed in the vision. I really believed in the application itself. It was just, we had so little experience in international marketing. We just did not know. And so we were running these ads, and we had one going in Malta. And almost immediately after this ad went live, we were just getting like tons of notifications on Facebook. We're like, what's going on? And it was just tour guides and tour companies saying, you cannot do this. Like, there are licenses that you need. There are, there are background checks and all these kind of things that tour companies and guides have to go through in order to guide people around. It was just very, very strict, that we just would have never known about. We didn't have a legal counsel at that time, and it was just a really interesting experience to immediately, I mean, we obviously immediately pulled the ads and we started to do our homework, and then that just kind of led to, what else do we not know? And so that led us pulling back, and we had ads in Asia and in Africa, and it was all over the world that we were putting out this message. And I think that was the first wake up call that, this isn't the way that, that we need to do this. We need to be more measured. We need to be more strategic in our approach.
And so so you all of a sudden you created all the content and the assets, and then all of a sudden you launch internationally. What languages did you pick, or what countries, or how did you narrow that down?
That was another big mistake that we made early on, was that we didn't translate our ads. We relied on the fact that the tourism industry itself tends to communicate in English, because it's kind of the intermediate language. You know, if you've got one person who speaks French and one person who speaks German, they can communicate in English sometimes. But I don't want to be too general, but that's at least what I've experienced, is that kind of being the go-to language. So we relied on that, and we ended up losing out on a lot of markets because of that. And that was something that we also started trying to incorporate and translate some of our ads. And interestingly enough, one of the first places that we did a translated ad in was in Helsinki in Finland. And we got such an incredible response. We had so many tour companies signing up in this little, not little town, but in this, you know, tourist town, because we had made that more personal, more tailored approach to reach out in their own language and do this ad. So one of the girls who was on the marketing team, she was originally from Bulgaria, and she had lived there most of her adolescence, and she knew people, a lot of people internationally. And so she knew someone from Finland who actually helped us translate. And that was really what we were doing. We were reaching out to people that we knew. We did not have a budget for getting professional translation. And we knew that Google Translate was not going to work. We knew that from other experiences that that wasn't the way to go. And so we were just tapping anyone that we knew. I mean, I had lived in Spain for 2 years, as we mentioned earlier, so I was taking a crack at the Spanish ads, and obviously we had ads running in Bulgarian, in Bulgaria, and it was really interesting. The owner of the company was Dutch, so it was really a very eclectic group, and we had all of this passion and love for travel and for different cultures, but we just were really naive and what it would really take to be successful in getting it off the ground internationally.
That's interesting. So first you went out in English and realized all the problems with the different cultures and no plan to translate. Once you did, results skyrocketed. So you see it works. And then the languages you pick are Finnish, Bulgarian, Spanish, and Dutch. Yeah. So that was your strategy behind which languages you were picking. That's one that people use.
Yeah, it was the ones that we knew. So that's where we started, you know, it was where we started. And I think our long-term strategy was definitely going to be to create more crafted messaging and to translate through all the languages. But I mean, like I said, we were so ambitious and so naive in our original plan to launch globally. And this was, you know, the ambition was not just ours. We were like 24-year-old, you know, marketing girls. So we were, you know, obviously excited to do whatever and travel the world. And so, yeah, let's launch globally. We don't know. But the owner of the company and his partner, they were the ones who were really pushing us to go full speed ahead. Let's launch all over the world all at once. And I think I know that all of us, even them, if we could go back and do it again, we would scale back and we would say, let's go for one market. Let's first off test it in the US and let's see what the adoption like is here. And let's see where we have pain points. And there's such a global audience just in the US. There's so many people traveling to the US that speak different languages. There would have been such an opportunity to translate our application into multiple languages, which we had done. We did have the app in all the languages. It was our marketing that wasn't originally translated.
Oh, that's interesting. So tell me more about the app translation. What languages was that in?
Oh my goodness. I don't know. It had to be like, you know, upwards of 25 or 30. We were really exhaustive in that. And I was not involved. So all of that happened before we started. The development of the application and the translation stuff happened before I started. So I'm not exactly sure what the process was for that. Our development team was based in Malaga, Spain. And so I imagine that they were a very smart team. They were thorough and diligent and just really wonderful to work with. So I assume that they had gone through the proper channels to get it translated appropriately. It looked great. I mean, it was really easy. They had the little global icon that you clicked and you could choose your language. So that was really good. And obviously the tour guides and the tour companies, when they would put their tours on the app, they could put it in the language that they wanted. I'm not sure if we offered translation services of their posts, but the look at the experience for the tourist who was coming and using the application was native to them and it was in their language, and that was good. It was our outreach as the company to other tour guides. It was like our B2B approach that needed to be translated or needed to be more culturally sensitive in our approach.
Which is interesting. So they built the really good, you know, I'll say mousetrap, put the languages in there. The end user could navigate through the language, but there was this big gaping hole in marketing about handling the languages. So where did that drop off happen?
When we got down to St. Pete, I think our expectations for what we were going to be doing were not in line with the reality of what was happening. And I think when we started to get positive feedback and we started to see people reacting well to the app, it all of like overnight went from let's launch in St. Pete, make this thing really successful here before we moved to Miami, we moved to Orlando, to hey, this is going well, let's just blow it up. And that's where the gap happened. There was just not enough thought, not enough care going into that decision. And it was fueled by just total excitement. I mean, it was such a great app. It was such a great idea. It was the perfect time for this. We were young, and it was this, you know, we had funding, and it was just really, really exciting. And I think we lost sight of just that precision and that strategy to help execute it properly. And I'd like to think that if we could go back and do it again, now that we've got 5 years of experience in marketing or more from that time point, I think that we could, I know that it would be much more effective for sure.
So, right. So it sounds like a typical problem that people have in marketing is they jump to tactics rather than laying the strategy first. So you were starting to say that earlier. What would you do instead now with the additional knowledge that you have?
Mm-hmm. Well, first off, I would just make sure that we had, you know, success where we were. We determined success is okay. We had 5 tour companies sign up with us, and we had 100 tour guides in St. Pete sign up with us. And that was our measure of success. We said, okay, this is great. Let's move on. But what we didn't have yet was users using the application. We weren't yet creating marketing kits for the tour guides and for the tour companies so that they could independently market through the app. We weren't creating, enough buzz in that marketplace for the end user. We were strictly doing a B2B marketing strategy. We were forgetting about the B2C. We weren't, you know, and that was kind of our commitment to these tour companies, is that we would help bring in business. And what we were just, you know, what we basically relied on was, well, there's an app, people will find it. We relied on organic adoption instead of trying to go out and create a tactical or a strategical marketing plan to drive adoption. And I think that was just number one, the biggest mistake that we made, especially because the tour guides and the companies were not charged to be on the app. We made money off of transactions. So if someone booked a guide, we would get, you know, a percentage or, a few cents off of that transaction. And so we were, you know, just fiscally not responsible. We weren't financially thinking about how we made money. We were just thinking about adoption at that, or getting tour guides at that point. And so I definitely think we would want to go back and create like a multi-pronged approach and say, you know, success looks like this. And it's not just having X number of tour guides. It's successfully launching this application in this location. And once we had done that, that would be the use case. That would be the case study that says this works. And then, okay, let's move into bigger markets. We worked in a midstream market, which was St. Pete. Now let's move to Orlando or to Miami and see what we can accomplish there. And I mean, it was unreal. I mean, just in maybe 6 months, like 100,000 tour guides and companies that had signed up. It was unreal. There were so many people around the world that were eager to use this. And a huge percentage of those were in the US. And we had joined the Guides Association of New York City, and we were meeting with those people and going to their award ceremonies and sponsoring events for them. And we had joined the Tourism Authority in Miami and in DC and in New Orleans. So we were meeting with all of the right people. We were just forgetting about the very important part that at the end of the day, this was an application that served people, that served tourists. And our responsibility to those companies was to help market our application to bring in business for them, and that's what we lost sight of. And so if we were to do it over again, I would start smaller, and then when we do move internationally, when we do take that next step to market on a global stage, I would have been so much more prescriptive. I would have said, let's start in one location that we're familiar with or that we know has a booming tourism market, or that we know we can communicate them with them in a personal way. And follow the exact same formula. You know, let's get tour guides, let's get tour companies, and then let's start driving adoption and awareness of this application.
Okay. So build it in one marketplace. And even what's interesting to me is that if you're trying to attract tourists into these cities and you have all the tour guides, there is some translation that you might need there for international tourists coming in. So it all kind of feed on each other.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's interesting too, because, you know, if let's say we're launching in Madrid, you know, we're not, the majority of the tourists probably aren't speaking Spanish, you know,
right. Yeah.
The tour guides are, and the guide companies are. So we need to be communicating with them in Spanish, but the tourists coming in, they could be speaking French or English or, you know, whatever. So it would have also been a big consideration in how do we appropriately market to tourists in their languages and make sure that we're catching the right people who are interested in visiting these cities. So there would have definitely been some like retargeting ads that were based on, you know, location and language. Certainly we would have needed a lot of translation of a lot of online assets to make that work effectively.
Okay, so let me take hypothetically, as you're launching in Southern Florida, big Spanish speaking population. So you pull in the tour guides that speak English, Spanish, and then you could still English, Spanish attract the tourists in those languages. Then you tweak and tweak and tweak and take it. Then you take that Spanish and English and pick Madrid or Mexico, or you figure out where, you know, what's the next market you want to do. And then you've got the formula to launch. Then from there you do English, Spanish, and maybe you add in French.
Yep.
And then you've pulled in, so that would be like more of a structure.
Yeah, it would have been like a land and expand kind of thing. You know, once we had proven success in Southern Florida and then maybe moved to like the other key tourism markets in the U.S. in New York City, obviously, Los Angeles, Chicago, et cetera. And the U.S. is such a great place for going to market with something international, because we have so many people of different backgrounds living in the U.S. that we can work with. And then so much of our travel, at least before March 2020, was international as well. So we would have had just such a diverse pool that we're trying to market to. We would have learned so much in how to communicate with and connect with people from different countries and different backgrounds. And that was what originally drew me to the job, was just the opportunity to work with people all around the world, and that growth that happens when you have cultures colliding and you've got people of different backgrounds communicating. There's so much growth and so much beauty that happens in those moments. And that's what I really wanted to take away from that experience and to contribute to that company. And I do think we achieved that in some levels, maybe not all the, you know, in the ways that we had really envisioned. But I did have the opportunity. I went to Mexico for a week and met with tour guides, and it was such a enriching experience. You know, a lot of these tour guides had, or these tour companies had lived in the U.S. for a while, or they'd lived in Canada for a while, or they'd moved to, you know, wherever. But they came back home, and they came back to Mexico to share their culture and their experiences with travelers and with tourists, and just speaking to them and hearing why they were in that industry and why it mattered to them to share that with others was really beautiful. And it reaffirmed why I was working for this company in the first place. So, you know, I wouldn't trade any of those moments. As much as we learned and as much as we maybe suffered through our growing experience and through our learning experiences, I wouldn't trade any of that for anything.
So I want to jump back to when you said you opened Florida, and then you go to New York and LA, and you named the different cities. So to me, that almost says, well, maybe you'd think you'd keep it all in English, or you would have translated at that point, because and I couldn't tell if you were talking about bringing international visitors in, or people in the U.S. don't speak English, and so you could target them. So can you expand a little bit more on that?
Yeah, I think we would have kept our marketing in English at that point, and that would have been the safe thing to do, because again, we did not have the budget to properly translate all of the materials that we would have needed to do so and launch internationally all around the world the way that we did. I think it would have been beneficial for us to really get our message down and our formula down, our strategy down in the U.S. where it was easier and safer to do so, just because we understand the cultural implications of the things that we say most of the times in English. You know, you can say something in Spanish or in French and you don't mean anything wrong by it, but you just don't understand the translation or what you're saying, and then it can offend people. or create bad publicity or something. And then that's obviously not what we wanted to do. So I think we would have definitely stuck to marketing in English, but obviously having, you know, the translations on the apps, because understanding that a lot of the tourists would have been speaking different languages or not native English speakers. Another big initiative that we had was attracting tour guides and companies that spoke many different languages that we could market to those tourists. And that's already within the travel and tourism industry a requisite. You know, it's something that many of them proudly display that they can provide tours in different languages so that the experience is more personal and more, more, you know, richer. So
you could see that they spoke English, yet your experience was if you translated it, your sales would go up or your network would go up. So mm-hmm. At what point then do you decide, all right, we've done it just in English. We're gonna figure out the budget to do it in other languages.
Yeah, I think it would have been once we were, generating revenue. That was the thing that we never did, was actually start turning a profit and not even being profitable, just actually generating a revenue, I think would have been at the point where we would have comfortably said, okay, let's start testing internationally. Let's identify a market like maybe Mexico, because it's our neighbors and there are so many, you know, it just would have made sense maybe to start there, for instance. And, then start translating our marketing materials in Spanish. And then, hey, we've got them in Spanish for Mexico. Now we can expand in Latin America and South America. And you know, I won't say Spain because, Castilian Spanish and Spanish spoken in Latin America, Central America, very different things. So we would need different translations for that.
Okay. So that makes a lot of sense to me then, is yeah. You were trying to do it on the cheap and go big, rather you're saying we should have narrowed down, figured out the formula,
yeah.
Got some income coming in, and then use that to yeah. translate and increase it. Yeah.
Yeah,
that makes a lot of sense, but you were in a difficult situation where the app is already translated, it could be used, you're trying to get tour guides, you're thinking it's global, so, you know, 2020 exactly. Hindsight. So
absolutely.
What do you think you guys did well?
I think we did get 100,000 tour guides and tour companies signed up. So I think our outreach was effective, and we did a great job at, because we had all had this international experience, I think we understood better than, you know, obviously someone who had never interacted with other cultures outside of their own, how to communicate with people of different backgrounds, how to be respectful, how to be open-minded and really appreciate and value the cultural differences. My friend or my coworker, she went to Croatia and Bulgaria and all these places in Central Europe for 2 or 3 weeks. And she just came back with such amazing stories of the people that she met. These tour guides and these companies were just so welcoming and warm and just totally touched her life. And I had such a similar experience in Mexico, and I went to Aruba and Bonaire as well. And it was just really something beautiful. It was incredible. And I think we did a really great job at representing the company and the brand. I think we lived what we were preaching. It was really about making it easier for people who are traveling around the world to have enriching, beautiful experiences and to connect with the natives. And our whole tagline was tour like a local. It was tour me, tour like a local. And it was getting that like local insider experience. You know, if you go to Aruba, it's very easy to go to a stay at your hotel and go to a casino and then maybe spend some time on the like man-made beaches. But if you go with a local, you can eat like fresh caught fish in this beautiful little shack on the side of the beach, and you can go tour these incredible deserts. And I mean, there's just such a different experience you can have when you're with someone who's passionate about that location and who sees it. I mean, when you can see it from their view, through their eyes, and how much they love where they live and are passionate about their country or their city or their town, that's invaluable. And that's what we wanted to share with people. And so we were living that ourselves, and we were just trying to incorporate that message into the brand and into the marketing. You know, the more that we went out and explored and met with these guides, the more we were able to really hone in on what it was that we were bringing to the market. And we really believed in that.
Wow. That's a shame that app didn't move forward, because I would be all over that.
I know.
Any chance they'll bring it back, or it's done?
We just completely ran out of funding. Like I said, we never, because we didn't focus on driving adoption from tourists for using the application, we just did not have revenue coming in. And that was the Achilles heel. That was what took us down. I think we were really overconfident because the gig economy, especially 5 years ago, was so front and center. It was, you know, Uber and, I don't think Instacart was around yet, maybe, but Lyft and all of these applications, that's who we were modeling ourselves after. And I think that we thought, because they had already built the mold, because they had already put some idea into the marketplace, all we had to do was kind of follow that pattern and we would be successful. And I think that was a oversight. I think that we were a little bit too comfortable in thinking that it would just be adopted organically. And I really wish that we could go back and redo that, because it was a great idea. It was a great idea. I like to say, if sometime in the future I come into some money, I'm going to revisit it.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Yeah.
So tell me about, a really good or memorable experience you had, either with living over in Spain or in one of your trips through this. Like, what are those cultural experiences that sticks with you?
Yeah. So I was living in Girona, which is like a 35-minute trip on the bullet train north of Barcelona in Spain. And they have this annual festival called Las Fiestas de, I'm going to get the name wrong. It's their annual festival. It's mm-hmm. been way too long since I've lived there. I need to remember. But it happens in October, and they just have rides in the park, and they've got vendors and food and concerts, and it's just so much fun. It's absolutely a blast. And they have this thing that they do called Corre Foc, which means fire run. And I had no idea what to expect at all. And my friends are like, let's just go, let's go out there. And it's literally people running through the streets with like fireworks and torches, and they're wearing masks, and it's just packed. It's so crazy. And then when you get, they run to the city, to the center of the town. And so like you follow them, you're all running with fire, and it's a little bit dangerous. It's really hot. And you get to the center and they do this incredible pyrotechnic show. And I just remember like standing there and watching these guys like with flamethrowers and breathing fire and like all this kind of stuff, fireworks going off. And I just remember like taking that moment all in and just sitting there like, I've never experienced anything like what is happening, but it was so incredible. It was just one of the many, many, many moments that I stopped to consider where I was and what was around me, and just thought about how much better my life is because I had had those experiences and seen those things that, to them, I'm not saying they take for granted. They're very proud of their traditions, but they grow up with that. You know, I can't imagine, there were little kids there. They're like 3-year-olds. Running with fire. And I'm like, this is something else. It was, it was incredible.
Wow. I've never heard of that. I've heard about running with the bulls, which sounded right. Dangerous. So this town, they run with the fire and even all with the fire. Kids and everything.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's wow. Incredible. Yeah.
And nobody gets hurt.
I wouldn't say that. Yeah. Huh. Risk versus reward. That's the thing there, I think.
Right, right. And you think about the United States, it would never be done here because the rules were there.
Exactly. Yeah, it's so interesting. I mean, too, it's the same fairs. They have these fairground rides, which are very similar to the ones that we have at our fairs here. But it was like the last night that they had the rides available, and they were like 25 cents each to ride because it was the last night. And it was very clear that these rides had not been serviced for the 2 weeks that they had been sitting in this park. And I'm on this like huge, like 100 feet in the air, twirling thing. And I'm just like watching bolts fly off of it. I'm like, this is interesting. This is interesting. It was fun though. There's a level of danger that just makes it a little bit more interesting.
Good for you. Good for you. Yeah. There is a lot of fun with a little bit of going outside your normal experience. So I'm glad to hear that. I'm not sure I would have done the ride, but I think I would have run with the fire. That sounds pretty funny, especially if you're out there doing it. Yeah. All right. So now you're over at Passport.
Yeah.
Right. So tell me a little bit about what you're doing now.
Yeah, so Passport is, we like to joke, it's the most popular app you've never heard of. And the reason for that is that we white label mobile pay parking applications, among a lot of other things, around the U.S. So if you live in Boston, you've got Park Boston. If you live in Chicago, you've got Park Chicago. If you live in Austin, it's Park ATX. You know, we do this in big cities all around the U.S. And it's just a full mobile mobility solution for cities and towns of all sizes that want to offer mobile pay parking, so that it's contactless, you don't have to touch meters, or we do also enforcement solutions and permits and things like that. And we've got a lot of big things on the horizon in terms of kind of bringing all of those mobility solutions onto one platform, one backend system where you can manage and operate everything, which is really great. And we're working with city leaders on making this technology really work for cities, especially in a time like this where, you know, a lot of our communities, our cities and towns, they make important profit off of permits, off of enforcement from, you know, parking and things like that, and just from paying for parking. And with, you know, the situation with COVID-19, people weren't parking. Or the cities had chosen not to enforce parking rules, just, you know, given the climate of things. And so a lot of communities have taken a big financial hit, as have a lot of industries over the last few months. And so we're really trying to work with city leaders to help them recover their that lost profit and help put out a safer option for parking in cities, you know, where they don't touch meters necessarily. They can do it on their phone when it's convenient. And things like that. So I'm working on the marketing team. I'm the marketing automation specialist. So creating email campaigns, creating technology automations that just make the marketing and sales things more efficient, working big with the product marketing teams and client marketing and things like that to optimize our message and optimize delivery of message and make sure that we're hitting people at the right time with appropriate messaging. Especially it's been so crucial during the last 6 months. We have to be sensitive to the climate. You know, we don't want to try to sell. It's really hard to sell something right now, at least the last 6 months. So just being sensitive and trying to be, you know, a trusted partner and letting that come through in our marketing.
So a lot of the marketing you're doing is towards employees at different cities that would want to use the app. Okay. So you had mentioned before that Passport had started to go international, but pulled back now. So if you create a vision for them going international, like what would you recommend from your experience would be the first steps to take?
Well, I will say that, you know, it's night and day working for Passport versus working for Tourme. I mean, these guys are so smart and so thoughtful, and everything that they do is measured, you know. So I trust the experience there that we would have the right plan when we do expand. We have moved into Canada, and so we've got like Toronto and some other cities that are using Passport, and we also have some cities in the UK that are using Passport. I don't think that we've got any immediate plans to move beyond that. We do partner with a similar application in the Netherlands who have been a huge help for us and have really given us a lot of insight on what they've seen in Europe. So it's just different, you know. There's a lot to learn about how cities in other countries manage parking and enforcement and things like that, and there's just such a learning curve, and we're still perfecting what we do here. And so I think it's a very similar approach to what I would have done with Tourme, which is let's figure out the formula here. Let's make sure that we're servicing our clients in the U.S. the best that we can, that we're providing them with an application that works for them and is, you know, generating what it needs to generate before we try to move internationally. And then when we do, let's start small. You know, I think it was very safe and very strategic that we moved into Canada and the UK first. And I know that it's not, like I said, on the immediate roadmap to move further than that. But I think that was, as a first step, the right first step.
Right, right, right. So it's amazing that the plan, what you learn can directly be applied to here. You figure out the formula. Then when it comes to messaging and everything, you know what to implement and what to translate.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, everything that I learned at Tormi in some shape or form has benefited me in my career. And, you know, even at the agency that I worked at, you learn a lot when you take a leap like that, when you take those risks, you know, as scary as they are and as much as you may lose at the end, you definitely gain some experience and some knowledge that can be applied in a lot of different ways.
Right. When we had talked earlier, you said you would learn a ton of things when you were going through that. Do you want to kind of summarize them now? Do you remember what they were?
Yeah, I think just as a person, I learned a lot about myself and how I navigate a corporate work environment. You know, we were still a startup, and so it was, you know, fun startup, that kind of thing. But it was still a corporation, and the people that we worked for had 30 or 40 years of experience in corporations and things like that. And coming from this 2-year teaching experience in Spain, and, you know, like I said, I'd done some small internships in college, but I had never really been in that environment before. And I learned so much about myself and about having a voice. You know, the first few months of marketing for Tormi, I kind of did what I was told. I was in an entry-level position. I was way, you know, over my head. So I really spent the first few months just observing and, you know, doing as I was told. And I think somewhere in that I found my voice and said, you know, this isn't working and this is why, and this is what I think we could do better. And I've never forgotten that. You know, I took that to all of my, you know, throughout my career, I've remembered that you hired me for a reason. You know, there's something that you saw in me that you thought I could bring to the table. And it's important that I exercise that. And that's really benefited me. And then just also just the process of failing, you know, we failed. But I don't feel like I lost anything. I feel like I gained so much and I learned so much. And so it's, you know, it's a really difficult thing to go through. It doesn't feel good. But taking that experience of failing and kind of pushing forward and saying, okay, well, what can I do now? You know, how can I make sure that this experience and these things that I learned don't go to waste and don't just all, you know, be a failure in my eyes? How can I take this and make something wonderful out of it? And I think that I've done that. And I think that I never forget what that was like, to really believe in something and really be passionate for something and it just not succeed, you know. Mm-hmm. And I would go back in any moment and do it again. I really would.
So what happened when it kind of closed or ended? Did they call you in one day or was it slow or?
Yeah, I kind of saw the writing on the wall, and I was not in a, I kind of bowed out before it completely fizzled. It lasted about 6 more months after I left. But I was also really tired. You know, I was really burned out. We were working, we did have an office, but we were working remotely so much because we were traveling. You know, I spent at least 6 weeks just completely on the road, living out of a suitcase. I didn't have a house, you know, we lived in a house together in St. Pete. It was me and two other, my two colleagues. We were living in a shared home.
Wow.
It was a beautiful house, and we were very fortunate because we got along really well, and I still love them and we talk all the time. One of them lives in Germany now, and the other lived in Japan for a while, so we're still all really international. But it was difficult, and I think after, you know, almost a year of doing that, I just felt for my mental health. You know, I had put so much into this, and I could see it wasn't working. I could see that we had made some big mistakes early on that if I had had the energy at that point to in the resources, you know, we didn't have the resources to fix what we had done. And I think if we had, maybe we could have pulled it off, but yeah, I burned out. So I think that's a big thing too, is just like, if you, you know, we can't all be Elon Musk. We can't all be sleeping under our desk. If you want to be successful, especially when you're working from home, which I know a lot of people are right now, you just have to make, you have to make time to turn off and to shut off, because you're not going to benefit yourself or your business by burning out. And I think if I have any regret, it was giving up a little bit before the end. But like I said, we were running out of resources. We had stopped traveling. We were just trying to keep it alive at that time. So when I moved to Charlotte and joined the agency, I think.
I'm sorry, what?
That was when I moved to Charlotte and got into tech, into marketing for tech. So.
Yeah. What recommendations would you have for people that travel as much as you did?
Oh, goodness. So many recommendations. Pack light. I know a lot of people, I had this, and I should have known better, because when I, you know, when I lived in Spain for 2 years, I knew how to pack. And for some reason, when I moved to St. Pete, I brought this enormous suitcase, and then I had to carry it with me everywhere. I was taking this like 100-pound suitcase on planes to Mexico and New York and Aruba and stuff. And it was just so crazy. I'm like, I don't need 10 pairs of shoes at all. Not for any reason. So yeah, just be mindful of that. Try to sleep when you can. Eat healthy. We fall into this terrible pattern of like eating at Chick-fil-A in the airport, or, you know, getting, drinking too much coffee. And it just, at the end of it, I felt really unhealthy. And I think, you know, even if we had kept that up, I probably could have gone longer. Just having better sleeping patterns and eating better. Cause I ended up doing like not a detox, but after I left the company and moved to Charlotte, I spent about 6 months just really focusing on my health again, cause I needed to. And I just felt so rejuvenated at the end of that. And I think if I had kept my health in the front of my mind, if I had prioritized that over my job, I think I could have gone longer.
Yeah. That's a really good reminder, particularly when you're traveling, when you're on a different time zone and don't have access to food at home.
So. Yeah. Bringing snacks. I mean, you know, it's easy to get hungry and there's peanuts or something, which I guess isn't the worst, but I pack snacks. I'm like the mom with the snack purse. You want an apple? I got an apple.
It's good. At one point we can find any healthy food at airports. They've done a bit better now, but
they have. Yeah.
So that is all right. So I got to ask you, what's your favorite foreign word?
Very boring word. I've thought a lot about this, and it's a little silly, but in Catalan, the word for goodbye is adeu, which is from, you know, kind of similar to adieu or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's my favorite word, because there are two very distinct ways to say it. One way is to extend it into six syllables, where you go adeu, it's just really long, or you do it really fast, like half a sentence, half a syllable, which is adeu. Adeu or adeu. There's no in between. There's absolutely no in between. And it was so fun when I lived in Girona, and I was very passionate about learning Catalan. I think it's an absolutely beautiful language, and so it was so hard for me to pick my favorite word.
I love that because it sounds like it just takes you right back to when you were living there and you could hear the sing song or the short.
Or the short. Absolutely.
Oh, that's great. How about your favorite vacation?
Favorite vacation. Now, this is an interesting question. There are several. So there was one Christmas. I love Christmas. It's my favorite holiday. And in Spain, they don't have like a warm and fuzzy Christmas, because it's Mediterranean. There's palm trees everywhere. You know, you can't really have fir trees and ornaments and things like that. So they have a lot of interesting and very fun Christmas traditions, and I do love Christmas in Spain. But the 2 years that I was there, I was kind of missing the traditional Christmas that I had come to know and love in America. So the first year we did a road trip through Germany and through Prague, and that was just so beautiful. I went with three of my friends, and it was the first Christmas I had spent away from my family. and we drove. It was a road trip. We landed in Frankfurt and drove all the way across the country to Berlin, and then we drove on to Prague, and it was just so fun. We rented a car, and they gave us this little Kia Rio, and so there's four people in all of these bags, this little Kia. It's like a 6-hour drive across the country, and I'm on the Autobahn, and I'm like so excited about that, but this little Kia Rio can only go 60 miles an hour, so like, I'm in the right lane the whole time, just getting past, and it was so funny, and it was exactly what I wanted, what I was needing. We went to the Christmas market, and we had Glühwein, and we saw all of the history that's in Berlin, and went to the Berlin Wall, and you know, in Prague, I didn't know much about it at all, and they're just such a beautiful, beautiful country, and I think that one was definitely one of my favorite vacations. I've had some others since then that were maybe not as interesting as that, but I think that one was a good one.
Yeah, that's fantastic. It sounds like you gave yourself a great Christmas present by having a wonderful experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
How about, so we talked earlier about most rewarding or memorable cross-cultural experience. How about anything that you experienced where you really made a cultural goof, or that you heard about, or one of your coworkers might have done, where you really made a mistake?
Yeah, I'm sure I've made some critical mistakes. There is one that was a little silly. So I actually, before I lived in Girona, I lived in Galicia, which is in the northern part of Spain, and they do the Spanish like lisp, where they say, instead of ciudad, they say ciudad. Mm-hmm. And so I started using the lisp because it was just, you know, it made me feel like I fit in a little bit more, even though I have blonde hair. I just feel like I fit in more if I use the lisp in Galicia. And so when I moved to Catalonia, they don't do that. They predominantly speak Catalan, and then when they speak Spanish, they speak it with a, you know, with a very clear accent. They enunciate very well. It's very easy to understand when Catalan speaks Spanish. But they don't do the lisp. And I was at a hostel, and I was trying to get directions to the center of town. And I asked them, I said, perdona, like, ¿dónde está el centro de la ciudad? And he goes, excuse me, el centro de la ciudad está aquí. Like, he was over emphasizing the fact that I was doing it wrong, and it was so embarrassing. And I think I called Girona a few times to people, and they just would get so irritated with me in a very kind of curmudgeonly funny kind of way. That's just their personality. They're very funny, and I think that was something definitely I dealt with for the first couple of months when I was living in Catalonia, was just, you know, learning that Catalan is first. If you can learn that and you can speak that, you'll make a lot more friends. And then two, if you're going to speak in Castilian Spanish, do it the right way.
which is really interesting, because a lot of people are afraid to try another language. Yet if they do, they feel more welcomed. But now you're having the experience where you used it and your accent was off, so you felt bad about it.
Yeah, I did it wrong.
Yeah, how do you balance off trying to use the language but not getting laughed at or smirked at?
Yeah, I think you have to build a tough skin. That's really the only thing, you know. You have to be confident in what you're saying. And I was confident in what I said, and he was teaching me something, you know. He was trying to help. He wasn't being a jerk. He was a little tongue in cheek, very funny. They have very squirrely personalities. They're so funny. And I appreciated that, you know. That was my first experience speaking to someone in Spanish in Catalonia, and I learned, okay, I better not do that anymore. And then I didn't have that experience after that. And so I am, as uncomfortable or awkward as it was at the time, I was grateful for that, because I did learn. And you know, I had a friend who had lived in Figueres, which is a town near Girona, and he taught me a lot of just easy Catalan phrases, like how to order coffee and how to say thank you and excuse me and things like that. And so I was grateful for that, because at the time there wasn't a lot of resources for learning Catalan. You know, I don't think Duolingo had a Catalan course at the time, which they do now, which is really great. But that went a long way. That was a mistake that I made in Galicia. I did not have as good of a time culturally in Galicia, because they speak Gallego there, and I never ever made the effort to learn Gallego. I at the time, my Spanish wasn't that great, and I knew I had to take one battle at a time. Let me try to learn Spanish first.
Right.
And I just didn't make as many friends that were, you know, I didn't make as many local friends. I didn't have as enriching of an experience as I did when I moved to Catalonia. I really, really made that effort to communicate with them in their own language. It went so far and they appreciated it. And they were so, so helpful. If I ever made a mistake with the language or a blunder or I said the wrong thing, like they corrected me, but it was always, you know, to help me. It was never to insult me.
Okay. So that's good to know. At first I was interpreting that it was kind of rude in the way, but it was playful and fun and helpful.
It was playful. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
so you did score a lot of points by trying and learning some of the phrases. Okay.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, we're coming out to the end of our time. Do you have any recommendations for people that are looking into doing global marketing?
Do the research. Just do the research, do your homework, start small, you know, think simple and then scale. Take one small step and then, you know, think about big picture. And really understand that communicating with people in their own language on their own terms is, it goes so far. It really does. People respect that and they appreciate it so much. Even if you do make mistakes or you do say the wrong thing, you tried, you'll be forgiven. You'll learn from it. They'll help you.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. That's fabulous. And if people want to learn more about you or get in touch, what's the best way to find you?
You can find me on LinkedIn. It's linkedin.in.com/bcooper216. So that would probably be the best way.
Okay. bcooper216. Okay. Yeah. Thank you. It was wonderful having you here today.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I had fun.
Thank you, listeners, for listening today. I hope you learned something. She has great insight as to what you can do as a startup company for expanding international. If you learned something today or you had a chuckle, tell somebody about this podcast. You can find it on all your favorite places to listen. We'll talk to you next time.
That's a wrap for this session. A big thanks to you for listening to the Global Marketing Show. Hope you had just as much fun as I did. New sessions launch weekly on all places you find podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Google Play, and of course on our website. If you know someone interested in this topic, please tell them about us. Au revoir for now.